Claro.
Hello. Sorry, just checking my pool because it's doing something. Nope, it's okay. Never mind. It must be something scanning something. My server sits right across from my desk. So anytime I see all my hard drive lights start flashing for no apparent reason, I get paranoid. So I have to check the whole status. It's just something scanning something, so it's all good. How's everyone doing today?
I'm okay.
Didn't sound convincing, Jeremy.
We're doing our sunflower upgrade today. So, I'm
Oh, fun.
anxious to see how that turns out.
Ours is on Sunday.
Nice.
I need to give our hosting provider the final sign off today, saying yes, it's okay for them to do production. And I'm trying to get staff to tell me whether or not permissions seem to be working for them. So, that's fun. We'll see. Hopefully, everything will go okay for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the whole thing, like all the prep, all the testing, interfacing with the other self-hosters and with Index Data, like all of it has gone so smoothly. And we're right here at, at deployment time. And part of my brain is thinking, Jeremy, you just forgot something,
Wait for the other shoe to drop, basically.
I'm thinking, there's probably some button somewhere that I just forgot to hit that's going to keep everything from blowing up.
I know what you mean. I met with our dev group on Monday because we're going to Eureka, so we have to change all our API calls. We have to make sure that all our machine account passwords are reset and going through all this stuff. And it's like, okay. And we're going through a list of stuff. It's like, is that everything? And they're like, we think it is.
But I'm so old, so I were working at an IT department when we were shifting from 1999 to 2000, and it for all the products and servers and all of that, I think we worked 12 months ahead of it, going through all details, going through all programs, going through everything, and we're super nervous for because that was the year was only 99, so changing everything to be year by four digit was a major thing, and I think there was so much nervousness in all companies and air controllers and the whole, and then hardly there was not much
It's just a
bump on
blip.
the road. It was
Exactly.
a lot of nervousness and drama ahead of it, and then it went well.
I was a teenager back then, and I had a buddy who snuck outside during his family's New Year's countdown when it rolled over to 2000, and he threw the breaker in the house and shut the power off in the house right at midnight, which was, his whole family were like, "It's happening."
Oh, so for he did it for fun.
Yeah.
So, oh, okay.
I remember what was it? I do remember that. I lucked out in when the library moved to Voyager in 2000. And I can't remember if they moved before the new year or after the new year, because before that they were on notice, but they weren't even on like the official branch of notice. They had, were on a highly customized branch of notice. So I lucked out. I didn't have to put up, but I remember everyone panicking, and even like New Year's Eve, everyone watching Europe to see if Europe started melting down, because that would be a precursor to what would happen in the United States.
But fortunately, Charlotte did her job, and
Yes, everything is fixed. Everyone was convinced. I remember people drawing money out of the bank because they were convinced that their bank accounts would get messed up and they would go to zero. I'm like, I don't think that would actually happen. It might miscalculate your interest.
It was so like my parents bought like hundreds of pounds of beans like that. It's just people were doing the dumbest stuff. It was a funny moment.
It really was. I mean, wasn't there something also that hit around, I want to say 2010 or 2020, that there was a slight panic of the same nature?
2012.
Okay, 2012.
Yeah, there was like some kind of Mayan prophecy or like some kind of
Oh, yeah,
like
that's.
Mayan calendar or something that ended on 2012 or something, just because some guy got tired of like carving in clay or and a thousand years
Yeah.
later we're all freaking out.
Well, I mean, it was, what was it, last year? There was the one minister that got traction that was prophesizing that the end of days was like there was two different dates last year when the world was coming to an end, and the rapture was hitting. I'm like, oh my God! I'm like, whatever.
Well, I'm gonna it might just be the three of us, but I'm sure we can get something done. I'm gonna share my screen.
Sounds good.
I was writing a novel over the break. I only got eight chapters left.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Well,
It's not IT based, is it?
it is well. No, it's not. It's a science fiction. So,
So you have a double career. You are an author as well.
I have a career and I have a hobby. That's where it's at right now.
If Jeremy all of a sudden disappears from the Folio Project, we'll know what happened.
Yeah.
Here in Scandinavia, some of our more famous authors, especially writing crime novels, in their 50s, they start writing books,
Yeah.
and when they are 60, they are multimillionaires because these books are being picked up by
Yeah, oh,
Netflix and
that is true. I mean, that is so interesting. I didn't really think about it consciously, but I watch a lot of Scandinavian crime drama. It's pretty popular.
they're always very dark,
Yeah.
dark and
That's a,
murdery.
I like that stuff. Just I need something that's more dramatic than all of the drama that's already going on in my life. So it's gotta get pretty dark.
That's a lot of drama.
Nothing can beat the latest couple of 4 days right
Yeah.
now.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's enough to have me turning the TV off, I'll tell you that.
Index Data, we have a channel called Politics,
Oh,
but
nice.
I have left that because I simply cannot
Yeah.
do it.
That's a courageous cultural decision for y'all's company. Y'all have a lot of confidence in the bonds of friendship in your group.
It's one thing that's deteriorated over the years. I used to, when I was younger, at my old job, I would sit there and talk politics, religion, and everything else with one of my coworkers. And we were on opposite ends of the spectrum, like drastic opposite ends of the spectrums. And we would sit there for like hours discussing all this shit. And I never got upset with anything he said. He never got upset with anything I said. And we were just trying to like, okay, well, this is why I agree with this sort of thing. But now it's just kind of like, okay, you don't agree with me? You must go away. I don't want to ever see you again. It's like,
Yeah, you're right. People's ability to entertain ideas that conflict with their own has definitely seemed to diminish. And I try to maintain discourse with people I know and trust. But I think a big part of it is a lot of people are trying to have these conversations virtually and like on the internet, on Reddit or whatever, and it doesn't work, I don't think, outside of the context of relationship, I think.
No, that's true.
I mean,
But it's not because we are disagreeing in Index Data, but I simply get too sad. It's I it, and it's not I am so aware about how bad the situation is. So but let's yeah let's focus on this instead. That's more healthy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so the next deadline that we have, we got a little over a month to hit. Though I think we probably will push this out because this falls on our one of our calming weeks. So we'll probably be delivering this in the first part of March instead. But the next thing that we have is the delivery of a minimally viable DIP process. I have to be honest, this morning at like around 8:30 was the first time since we left for the break that I thought about really in any of this stuff in depth at all. Well, I'm raising my hand. I have Zoom killing me. But I did pull things up and it looks like we had talked about familiarizing ourselves with the two versions that exist of the DIP process, the original one that was presented last spring, and then the one that was modified to integrate with the community-directed development framework. So I don't know if either of y'all had a chance to do that, but I did hand these things to AI and spend a little bit of time building a difference list from the two documents. So I'd be happy to go over that if y'all think that would be a useful thing to do.
Yeah, it would be good to if we are starting working on the document, and then it can maybe we don't need to work on that for 2 months. That seems to me very long time for setting this up with all the groundwork we have already, but let's see.
Well, and I suppose I'd be open, if we knock out something we're happy with in like 3 weeks, I would be happy with, moving that date up.
So both Thomas and I are very, familiar with what is necessary for development teams to pick up work. So I'd say we probably need to kind of try to be a little bit approachable, practical, and not, make it too hand wavy, very different from where we are right now, because that will not help our approach, I think. At least that's my point.
I agree, and I think that we need to have I think that what has been created so far with the DIP process was quite honestly kind of created in isolation. I wrote some stuff down just to kind of get some ideas started, but I think that we ought to be willing to make adjustments and changes to it. And okay.
Because
Okay.
I think we need to have a process that is easily adoptable and for how the development teams and the product owners works today. Otherwise, it will be an isolated thing the PC is administering, and it's not being picked up, it's not being understood by the teams who need to do the work.
I'll tell you one of the things that I'm thinking about before we dive into this, when it comes to a minimally viable DIP, is I think that I am familiar with what Caitlin would like to see, which is a documentation of work that is intended to be accomplished before work starts on it. I think she wants, to see work coming s sooner, and in a way where the PC can kind of interface with these ideas before they kind of become entrenched because people have already spent resources on de developing them in a certain way. I think that that's kind of where
Yeah,
she's at with it.
But I have a little worry that it might be because but because I think the way we do the description of the features actually do provide that information. And it has a certain, we are trying, not all features have this structure, but we are trying and have over during the years really improved how the feature descriptions were to and with in scope or out of scope proposed solutions, and we have a pretty common a skeleton for how to write up these features. And then, of course, there's some where it's just a two-liner. And it's so, and that's what I think maybe we should try and look at some of the good examples and see and have the minimal viable dip to see if it aligns with how we do the descriptions, because then it is directly for the POs. It's not a new thing we invent. We simply build upon how we already works when
Yeah.
we are at our best.
I am concerned also. I know that there is a burden whenever you introduce a new bureaucratic process. You know, it's a burden on the community. And I feel like they work best when people have a clear vision for why it needs to happen. And then also that there's some sort of incentive for it. You know, like there's something that the people engaging in the process feel like they're getting out of, participating with the process. In the final formulation of the DIP, it's funding related. The idea is that there, the advantage for participating with the process is that it gives you access to resources in order to, see your work completed. But in the minimally viable arrangement, I imagine I still think that we need to think through why people would want to even do this. I don't know. But
So in the UX prod features, we have back-end, front-end estimates. So that is for the purpose of having a sense of is this a large, extra large, or maybe extra, extra large task. So that's an instrument we also already have in the UX prod features. But I'd say I'm probably coming from that angle that I would like us to see improvements on how we are doing things already, and not just flush all the good work out and just start a new and call it something new if we already have the building pieces for this.
Makes sense.
Okay, let's see. So we may have to move our MVP PC presentation date into March. Let's just take a look at the comparison. So we had this original Folio DIP initiative. There's a link to it in the action items from our last meeting notes. We have these two Google Docs right here, and one of these is the original DIP. I won't go through all of it right now, but just it's 7 steps, and it does not include any of the broader framework content from the CDDF. So things like the pointing system and stuff like that. It's a little more laissez-faire when it comes to re resourcing the work that needs to be done. Then we had this version here, which is the version that was included in the CDDF document, which does have these concepts of like the development score and support score, and is a little bit more process oriented than the original. So here are some of the differences. The original DIP required approval from all three councils in order for the work to be approved, whereas the newer version only requires approval from the product council and the technical council. Do we have any thoughts on this? A preference for one or the other?
So here I think we probably should defer. So functional features should be approved by the product council, and NFRs and so non-functional requirements, or all kind of platform features, etc., that should be approved by the technical council. I have several times heard that Greg McAnally says that functionality he does not know anything about. So I think it will be wrong to just for the bureaucracy to request TC to review and get a presentation, etc., on all the functional requirements.
Okay, so I do think that most DIPs are probably going to be scoped broader than a single feature. So it's possible that they could include both functional and non-functional requirements. So are you suggesting that, like in an instance where that is the case, that both councils would need to approve it, or?
Yeah, what do you say, Thomas? I think it's a little overkill to ask the TC to review, and maybe I can think about the reading room circulation functionality. What would they say to that? But the PC would have an idea,
And
or
we can always
could.
add something too that the PC can also then make a requirement as part of its review process that has to go to TC. So if we're reviewing it and we feel that it spans out of our scope, that TC does need to review it, we could say, okay, you do also have to go to TC as well.
So the TC could do it on request by the PC.
So, like here's a for instance. Like one of the things that worries me sometimes is that I see new modules being created when I do believe that the functionality that is included could have potentially been integrated into an existing module, leading to like the proliferation of modules, specifically on the back end. This happens sometimes. I feel like that's kind of a non-functional concern because it doesn't really matter to the person clicking the button how that message is routed and handled by the infrastructure of Folio. But it does have, non-functional implications when it comes to things like the burden of hosting Folio, the resources required for hosting, and how hard it is to do upgrades, and like the decomposition or the composition of the implementation of a feature is it feels like a non-functional requirement, and this comes up all the time in work that's being proposed.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but at the same extent, like we can try to mitigate that as much as possible, but I don't think we can stop it.
Well, sure, we can stop it. I could say, no, don't do it. We don't want to do it like that. That's not how we want Folio to grow.
But I'm saying like we can try to mitigate it, but we can't completely stop it because because it's an open source project, somebody could just say, I'm writing a new app and that's what I'm going to do. And if it's not part of the Flower release, it's not. I mean, so that's what I mean by we can't really stop it. But I agree. I'm also trying to think of like past past experiences where there has been new apps written without them being reviewed by TC or PC, and it's done after the fact. And how to get ahead of that, and what are the repercussions? Like,
I guess my the nature of my question is, do we envision a dip proposal? One of these proposals, including non-functional, like how often do we imagine that they would include non-functional requirements or have like non-functional implications?
So we are talking about the CDD, and in some of our very early conversations, we did talk quite a bit about non-functional and making sure that we were, for areas the CDD maybe took on, make sure that we have it have the modules upgraded to the latest TC requirement for what's it called that there
Like
you
approved technologies and
yes e yeah exactly yeah
yeah.
and that's ongoing work. It's constantly that we have to do these updates, so definitely I see that the CDD would end up with doing non-FRR works.
I do think I really like, Charlotte, your observation that the because the document just kind of says it requires approval from both councils, right? And it doesn't really qualify that at all. But I do think it's really important to maybe call out the fact that if the DIP has non-functional requirements, then the TC needs to approve it. And if it has functional requirements, then the PC, like basically explaining why each of the councils might need to be involved in that approval process. And I suppose, if somebody has a purely functional proposal, that the TC would not need to be involved in that approval.
So, but let me right now, if you are attending the release meetings, Oleksii holds on Thursdays, then for each of the flower releases, there is also a list of some of these tickets are called folio and a number, and then underneath it is all the modules who needs to be upgraded. New version of Spring Boot, new version of Vertex, etc., etc., and all different kind. Here, I'd say it is overly extra bureaucracy if DIPs for implementing decisions the TC already have taken is to be approved one more time. Because we right now the approach is simply if the TC has decided on this is the versions we are supporting for this given flower release, then it is simply just do it. There's no arguing. It's none of the Vertex modules index data is maintaining. We cannot skip an upgrade. We are simply we have to do it, and all the other developments seem the same. So again, where does our talk here now fit in? Because I think we should not again ask for a more heavy process than it is already.
I guess I'm thinking, like, let's say, all right, here's a great, for instance, mod workflow and mod Camunda, the modules that we are developing. At the time that we started building these modules, there was not a centralized messaging solution in Folio. And so in our implementation, We run our own messaging client that coordinates the activities between these two backend modules, right? If we were to come and bring this product forward to, if we wrote a dip about this, that architectural decision would be a horrible decision for, for our product, because we have Kafka, we have a messaging solution. We don't need two modules like inventing their own little messaging solution. But that's purely non-functional. I mean, nobody using these modules cares how the messaging is working, right? And so I guess I'm just thinking, like, when somebody's proposing to do some work, it seems like it would be good for what they're thinking, like the architectural decisions that they're thinking of making, to get some sort of vetting for somebody to say, look, we have a messaging solution, and if you need to coordinate the activity of two backend modules, use the existing messaging solution. Don't, come up with your own. That's an overhead that we don't want to, to see in Folio.
So, yeah, I fully understand. And I think what would be helpful is that we simply do a little list of what would be functional DIP proposals and NFR DIP proposals and what would not be. And I'd say all the these and if you go in on Trillium release, you can see these links to these tickets Oleksiy Petrenko has written up and all this sea of Jira tickets all the development teams are asked to do and they I think they would not be part of it because it's simply work we just need to do but the CDD team can be involved in this if they have responsibility to maintain some of these modules. 2 sec, I need to run for to get battery on.
Even giving your example, Jeremy, wouldn't that be something that would be addressed by TC as part of the platform review?
So,
Or do
like
you think that comes too late?
the module review process. So one of the things that I think Caitlin is really interested in this, is that it's been so hard to get people to interface before development, before they develop something. So often in the module review process, we have this super awkward moment where we're like looking at something and we're basically saying, you shouldn't have done it like that. And no, I mean, that's not good for anybody. I mean, the long faces on these development teams when they're like, all right, I guess we'll redo that. It's just, it's, and so anything that we could do where we can, provide this kind of insight into someone's plan rather than to, and in the same insight into their implementation, would be good. But
So, okay, I see what you mean. I mean, I understand kind of both, like where Charlotte's coming from is like what you're talking about is just a normal upkeep and upgrade process. And I don't think I agree. I don't think we want to mess with that. Like that runs fairly smoothly, and adding any bureaucracy to that is just going to make things more difficult. Now, changes in modules, and we can use the API gateway for one. We're now looking from moving from Kong over to Apache API. I think that should would make sense, and that should go through a review process before it's implemented and before it's done. And what you're saying too is like, what about technology stacks for new incoming modules? Because theoretically, it would hit PC before development even starts, but by the time it hits TC, development would have already started. So we need to.
that's exactly right. Is that so far, kind of how it has worked is somebody has an idea and they get kind of the green light to start working on the idea based purely on a functional analysis, right? We at the PC are like, this looks good. We like this functionality. And we don't think about the non-functional aspects of what they're proposing at all. And then they start working on it and they have a module that then they bring to the TC and then it gets some kind of like non-functional review. But at that point, they've already sunk resources into their implementation. And if they didn't, it just puts them in a very unfair situation. I think there needs to be a non-functional review way back at the beginning of the process to save people from, well, for a lot of reasons, to save people from implementing things in a way that is not going to be compatible. But then also, I think that Folio would be better off if there was some more intentional kind of forward planning when it came to non-functional implementation. I think it has grown in a somewhat haphazard way at times.
I agree. I mean, it's now that I'll play devil's advocate. Is that functional, non-functional review something that we should be doing, or is that something that TC should be doing ahead of time?
Well, I like the idea of the DIP being something that provides a window for both the PC to perform a functional review and the TC to perform a non-functional review, kind of at the same point in time. Which is the reason why both the PC and the TC are listed as approving agents for a DIP. It's like it's an opportunity for them both to kind of iterate with somebody proposing some work. It could be that there are no non-functional aspects of what they're proposing, in which case the TC could just rubber stamp it. They're like, this doesn't concern us. But it could be that there is something that they're interested in which case this would be an opportunity for them to start interfacing with somebody and say, it actually would be better if you took this approach instead.
Could we maybe have an approval process of these DIPs a bit similar to how approval of the critical service patches tickets are being done, where it is a Slack channel and you present what you want to do in a write-up and you link to your tickets and you some tickets are more extensively described than others, and then there is this, the RMS group is voting on it, and it needs to have at least 5 votes. And I think for the critical service patches here, you need at least to have 2 technical votes as well.
Yeah,
Would
I kind
that
of
be
like that
kind of
idea.
an, not so heavy? Because if it is, I can simply ima see that then the TC will need 3 weekly meetings if they are to review these things in a meeting constantly. Or the PC, we cannot just do 1 meeting a week then. We would also, if it is a full PC group.
I like that idea. And then we can also even add something in there that if we wanted to, we could kick one of those up to a full meeting if we feel that it needs discussion by a larger group within PC.
Totally right. Yes. It's not excluding, but it is trying to again have a little efficient process.
I mean, I think especially when we start throwing around words like minimally viable, I think that the lighter that implies something lighter weight, So,
And again, then we hook up on a proven concept, which we have. It is so it's not all who can vote, but the group who votes, it is transparent, the process, the approval process.
I think it'd also be easier for the POs too, because right now the CSP process is very well documented and it has a specific workflow that they all need to go through. So if we can mimic that with this process, I think it would just almost become second nature. That idea.
Okay. Is that good discussion on approval? Can we move on to some other differences? Okay.
Sure.
Another difference is submission and intake mechanism. Originally, the DIP could be submitted to any one of the three councils, and intake is decentralized and non-council driven. In the newer version, The DIP is submitted to a centralized DIP dashboard. So it's like a Jira, kind of thing. Establish a single system of record and intake funnel. We have a new proposition out there that maybe it could be a Slack channel or something like that. It could be both, I suppose. Like you could, create it on the dashboard and then, enter into the Slack channel to facilitate the discussion on it, something
We
like that.
can easily do a Jira DIP dashboard, not a Wiki dashboard, I think, but a Jira one where we,
Okay.
by tagging, we decide what tags to use, and then we can have in the dashboard and display all the tickets that is written up and up for being approved. Have another gadget showing all the dips being approved and maybe list what release they are targeted for or something. Yeah, we can.
There may also be something that we can ask Peter about, adding an automation or something to Jira that when somebody submits a new DIP, Jira ticket or DIP ticket in Jira, that it automatically just sends a message to Slack. So it cuts out one of the steps. But I do like the idea of keeping everything in Jira because the other plus side of that is then those tickets for these DIP requests can be linked directly to the UX prods or the work that's being done by the POs and the devs groups. So you can see, okay, this is DIP for blah, 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 blah. Here's the UX prods that are being covered by this, or here's the functional tickets that are going to be covered. We may want to limit what is linked. I don't think we want to see all the UI, the front end tickets, all the back end tickets, all the tasks, all the other stuff. But I think the larger overarching tickets should be linked to those.
So if we kind of look it as a diagram or something, then the Jira structure is that we have epics, we have UX prod features, and then the dips could be kind of a supporting ticket, and then we
Yes.
underneath the UX prod have all the stories and task and whatever.
Yeah, and at the DIP level, either you could link that epic if the epic is what is being described in the DIP, or you can link the individual UX prod or individual UX prods under that. I see a puppy.
It's my dog.
It's okay. Mine is laying on the floor next to me. She keeps wandering back and forth, which is great because if I hear it means that she grabbed something out of the living room and is running back to the bedroom to lay on the bed and chew on it, and she's not supposed to
So I can hear when my dog has somehow he always managed to get some of his toy underneath the closet, and then I can hear his. He cannot get it out. It's only me who has this magic talent to get it out.
They need us.
Need us, yes, for
They
food
need us for our
and
thumbs. All
So.
right. I think that all seems pretty straightforward. I think that both of the proposals were ambiguous as far as like what the precise mechanism is. I think Jira is preferable to Atlassian when it comes to this, and I think that pairing it with a Slack channel is a really good idea. So I think that that's some specificity that we can commit to. All
All right.
right. Another difference is resourcing model. And the original DIP resources described the financial or in-kind were described in financial or in-kind terms. Community funds and resources are optional, discretionary, and mediated by the community council. MOUs are collected as part of resourcing. And the MVP, I don't think we should describe it as we are creating the MVP. So this is like the CDDF DIP. Introduces formal qualitative scoring mechanisms, development score, support score, and uses community resource points allocated by the product council. So it's just like this whole integration into, if community resource points are insufficient, then the DIP can be funded through MOUs. So the original basically just said it's possible for people to contribute funding to a specific DIP if they want, and this will be collected by MOUs, and the CC will be responsible for coordinating that. Whereas in the new version, it has this whole CDDF framework of points and community resource points, and it has the option of getting these community pooled funds attached to the DIP, but then it also has the option for people to fund a specific DIP through MOUs. What are our thoughts on this when it comes to this idea of minimally viable? Do we want to mess around with funding at all with the minimally viable process? Do we want to take the approach of something more laissez-faire, like just the MOUs? I don't think we probably want to get into the whole development point thing if we're not firing up the whole CDDF.
No, you go ahead, Thomas. I was
I would
yours.
stay away maybe from actual funding, but because I think it's too early in the process to try to do anything around funding. But at the same extent, I think it might be beneficial as part of this minimally viable DIP is an estimation of resources for a project to be done. So if someone is saying, I'm doing this UX prod, it could be a general amount of times, how many sprints it is, how many developer hours, but some sort of estimate of time, because that will give us some data that we can then, when we do look at actual funding, how much it is actually going to cost to do certain things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, in a way, I like those t-shirt sized estimates we have right now, because talking about specific sprints is very much depending on if you have four guys to work on something, you can do it maybe in 1-2 sprint. If you only, which I have in many cases, one back ender and one front end, it takes more sprints to do the same kind of work, simply because fewer hands on. But the estimates is still the same. That's comparable. T-shirts, is it less than 5 days? Is it less than 10 days, etc.
So one thing that the EPAM teams use, and unfortunately is a little bit more, it's kind of on, it's like the t-shirt size is like, it's not based on solid data, it's based more on a feeling, is they'll use t-shirt
Pointing.
sizes for estimates, but yeah, they'll use the points.
Yeah.
And I think that might also be a good one too, because I know with Vega, when they point something, it's for an individual developer to work on that one ticket. So it doesn't take the entire team into account, it just takes that single developer's time.
But the points, and yeah, I have also worked with development teams doing point system, but the for when deciding a ticket, then it was just the estimates, so the t-shirt sized. And then when we got to the actual work and had the grooming session, then we did the pointing. And because then that's where the PO then get a sense of, okay, is this something my backender is going to work on for a long time? Or is it a yeah, half point, 1 point, 2 point things, then it's done in less than a week.
Yeah, we do the same thing. And then we also will, as development goes along, we ran into this actually with one of the module updates because the Circ modules still are using PubSub, unfortunately. We actually had to start increasing points on everything because when the developer got in there, he got one complication after another. So something that started out as 1 or 2 points then exploded like 5 or 6 points. So,
You need to revisit sometimes.
yeah.
So one of the things I'm thinking is that one of the benefits of us including estimates when it comes to resourcing estimates is we could loop back around and record the actuals, which over time would help us make better but budgeting decisions when it comes to like being honest with ourselves about how much this stuff actually costs, you know. I am inclined, I have mixed feelings about this. One is that it's hard for me to justify wading into the resourcing thing under the umbrella of a minimally viable dip. I mean, it seems like a very complicated issue. I think it's very valuable, and I do think it's, I think it is the key to cracking open this community directed development thing is the money part of it. I think that's what's ultimately going to restore power to the community is figuring out how funds can flow through the community into this work. So I don't like the idea of, I don't want to give up on the funding piece, but at the same time, I think that it introduces a huge level of complexity into the dip that it might be better to just not do.
Yeah. So
But
we have no, sorry.
I also
Yeah.
worry that without the funding piece, this becomes just bureaucracy without any benefit to anybody. So
Yeah, I'd say the CDD work will not lift 1 inch above ground if there's no funding for it. Then it's a debt. I am wondering, so we have a tri-council meeting end of January. If we kind of should have a kind of a short presentation of where we are and maybe come clear and say this is the community council's task in this. It's not so much how to prioritize what work, that's what the CDD is taking care of. It's not so much about how to staff this, et cetera, because that will kind of be set by how much money. But the money part and being experts in writing up MOUs and that is what the CC do all the time, right? And I think it's yeah. I don't feel very well suited to figure out how the money part should be kickstarted.
All right. If I had to make a decision right now, I would say we leave the funding part out. It makes me a little disappointed. But I think we I don't want to do it in a half-assed way, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh,
And
and that makes sense. And I think that's a good approach because you don't want to try to rush through the process because it's so complicated.
And it might be easier to figure out how that funding part can integrate after the rest of it is more solidified and established.
Yeah.
And we kind of, oh, this is what it looks like. So this is what it would be like to introduce funding into it. But
The other point of data you could do is, I mean, if you really wanted to capture a little bit more, is you could possibly ask as part of the DIP is how, who is funding the development, or where's the where, who is doing the development? Is it being what team? Like, you know what I mean? As not specifically like what money is being spent and that sort of thing, but who is this? Who is actually doing the active development?
I'm just gonna, for the purpose of the notes, record the other like major differences so we can discuss them in future meetings. But I think this has been good. What I like about this is I feel like for each of the points that we've discussed, we've come up with like a third option that isn't what was in the original and isn't what was in the CDDF. which kind of makes me feel like we actually are going to be able to produce something that is a new thing, an MVP dip, that's different than what's come before.
Are we
Now I
meeting
got excited.
next week?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to go ahead and share this document. And the notes, a comparison is here. Next steps, I'm just going to say continue to review both versions of the dip and the comparison document. And I think, I think one or two more discussions like this will get us into a place where we can create a new draft of the dip. That's kind of where I'm feeling we're at. Okay. Any other thoughts or questions?
I have a question, and that is in Autumn's group, it came up that here we talked about the Heracleanians. At least we are several who remember that Harry Kaplanian had suggested in the tri-council meeting during Wolfcon that we were to compare how Koha is doing their development. And then is it in this group that we have talked about
It was an autumn,
having... It was
autumn's
in
group.
Autumn's. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
But
have.
she has forgotten then, I think, she forgotten about
Oh.
that we talked about this release managers being rotating for the given releases. So it was not a continuous job for one person, but it was, yeah, then you were elected and then you had it for a release and then you shifted off and another one took on.
We were touching on some really cool ideas. I feel like we're talking. I don't. I'm not convinced that they're like the answer, but I remember us talking about like the idea of like defining executive positions in Folio, and like I don't feel like my initial reaction when the EBSCO folks were suggesting that we look at the Koha model was kind of indignant. I was like, what's wrong with how we do things, you know? But I do think that there are some interesting things. I would not want to ditch what we have in favor of their model. And I like the democracy in our model. I'm a big fan of democracy, and I feel like we do a good job of electing representatives. I like the idea of imbuing the councils with the authority in the community as elected representatives of the community. I like all that, but it is true that executive authority does allow a community to move more quickly. And if we delegate some authority to some executive roles, and then have those roles rotate or be by appointment, I feel comfortable with how that would allow the community to kind of control the authority of those people, that they wouldn't like run rampant. But at the same time, I also like that it implies a lot more efficiency. So I think that we can maybe introduce some of Koha's ideas with like these like rotating executive positions. So.
I think also part of it too was what Harry was also suggesting was that at one point when he did mention it, it was when we were talking about funding and hosting providers having individual institutions pay funding back through the hosting providers to the Folio project for the community-driven funding. And I know that's, I believe that was at the point when he was suggesting about looking at Quahog and their kind of like marketplace style funding that they have, kind of like a GoFundMe for features. And then it's, and from what I remember, we kind of expanded to like, well, why don't we look at everything COHOL does and go from there. But
It occurs to me, I mean, we're definitely getting in the weeds here, but
that's fine.
the thing is we already have these executive positions. They're just, we have Kalila, we have Alexi, like we they are performing executive style duties. It's just they're not official community positions necessarily. But they're definitely filling that role. And I think when it comes to funding, I mean, if you think about it, Alexi kind of maps to the technical council in a lot of ways. And Kalila kind of maps to the product council in a lot of ways. We don't really have a version of that for the community council, but what if we just had three executive positions that were like the executive embodiment of the role of each one of the councils? You have the product council, you have the product owner, you have the technical council, you have like the release manager, you have the community council, and you have something like a funding czar or something like
Oh,
that.
yeah, I was gonna say, would that be
The
like a
CC
treasurer?
executive could be responsible for doing the MOUs for development and
And kind of
that.
shepherding the
Yeah,
contracts, the RFCs and the
crowd
MOUs.
funding or whatever we should try and also I yeah if we because I'd say there's we have so many folio libraries now who is not really participating in the folio community, but if they are a part of their payment for the for being a folio library is contributed back to the community, then maybe they would also be interested in sitting at the table and having a say about how is their money to be spent. So it I'd say that could be a way to encourage more involvement.
Yeah, we were actually just kind of talking about this a little bit at implementers about community participation. And I know, like, I was at a few, I was at two EBSCO user group meetings, and I was joking, like, I need a commission because if I, the more people I get to sign up for Folio, I want to kick back.
That's
Because
great.
a lot of libraries will talk to us, to me about Folio when I was there. And I was really trying to push with them. It's like, well, if you do get into Folio, start engaging the community now. You can go in the Slack channel, you can do this. You can, oh, we don't have the people to do that. We'll just handle everything through our hosting provider. We'll just send them the ticket. We don't, we, and we'll let them deal with it. So yeah, I don't, I'd like to say that it might get them more involved, but I just don't think they have the internal resources for it. And I also even think with the funding model that was suggested, if it is a, if there is the ability to opt out, I think you might see about 50% of the institutions opting out of actually even paying anything back to the Folio community.
It's still more money, though, than we're bringing in currently.
It is. It is. So,
I,
but I think also that our Wiki space, our Slack space, etc., has been so enormous. So I have a sense that some of the libraries who has or and even institutions, there's this Swedish SUNET organization who is planning to roll out Folio to about 13 libraries. But they are not active on Slack at all. They are not following anything. And I am just astonished. How do they think they can roll out Eureka to 13 new libraries without being, they should chase you, Jeremy, or chase anyone who knows anything about Folio to be able to do this task. They have tried, but they are kind of, yeah, we know, we can do it. We are on our own. We'll figure it out. And I'm just
Oh, I have this is exciting news to me. I don't know if you guys will care at all, but I've been talking about how Texas A&M College Station is looking into hosting Folio for the other system schools, and the first A&M system school, Prairie View A&M, has about 10,000 students or so, has agreed, and they are moving on to Folio in the next 2 years. They're making the transition, so we got one.
Oh,
You're
awesome.
now turning
Awesome.
into a hosting provider.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I guess so. Here we
Yeah.
are.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks. I think this is a good idea. But well, shoot, I had a train of thought. My train just went off to the side. Oh, I know what it was. It kind of came up in the meeting that we had yesterday for the for communication and that about who owns folio.org and updating that and renovating it. It is my personal feeling that Slack and Confluence basically need to be destroyed and restarted.
Oh,
Archive,
yikes.
it's just every it's kind of like, and I'll throw out the radical one out there. It's the same thing with Jira. There is just so much in there in both Confluence and Jira that you go into any of them and it's overwhelming. It's hard to find anything. And some of the things that you stumble across are technical notes by the devs for a ticket they wrote. And I'd like to almost see a separation where the tickets that the devs are using are here, the tickets the community are using here. They're not closed. You can still interact with all of them, but there's a separation of where they are. And it's the same thing with information, that there's one place for SIG notes. There's one place for working documents that were generated out of development. And then there's actually true community documentation in another place. But right now, it's like you do a search for something and you get sent to 15 different places and you don't find what you're looking for anyways.
Yeah, I remember when Patrick Pace was working on development documentation as the developer advocate, and he was doing an admirable job of trying to wade through all of that. But you know, I would talk to him kind of out of band, and he's just like, this is rough. This is hard to do.
Is. I mean, because we hold everything in there. How far back do the actual Confluence pages need to go for SIGs? Because we have some that go back all the way back to the beginning of the project, which they're great for referencing purposes, but do we still need to actually have the pages in there, or could those pages be archived and they're links to PDFs of the archive for the year or something of that nature?
I think, I mean, I'm not inclined towards the like light a match and burn it all down solution, but I do think that some strong policy decisions when it comes to like how we move forward with these things and like retention policies and things like that, you know, could probably help us get healthier in all these documentation spaces over time.
I would even love to see a standardized template for all these things. So
Well, you're on
I
the
just
right
like to
council for something like
we're
that.
pushing that sort of thing. Yeah, I know. But I
Yeah.
mean, just like if you go from one thing to another thing, the way their pages are organized is completely different for the different SIGs. I mean, for PC to say, okay, all SIG pages should be organized in this manner. You should have this header page. This is the template that you should use, and this is the information here. If you want to add to it, that's fine. But this is the primary information you need. Meeting notes are ordered in this fashion, and this is their naming convention, and this is how you do a table of contents for that. And lay out a structure and have all of them do it. That way, when you move from one SIG to another SIG, you know exactly what you're getting into because everything is laid out the same. And it's kind of started that way. Like RA, I think actually PC is starting to use it that way too. But implementers all kind of
MC.
uses, yeah, they all kind of use that same similar layout, but having a formal template by PC saying, okay, all SIGs use this layout. I think my help. I can be a
Well,
little dictator.
I have to go make sure that our upgrade is going well.
Okay.
I've been ignoring it for the last hour, but I need to.
I mean, there's been no smoke. I haven't seen any smoke pouring out from behind you
That's
or anything of
true.
that nature.
I am
I'm
working from
always
home today, like I'm hiding from the whole thing.
smoking.
Anyway, it was great, folks. Take it easy.
Okay, yeah.
Good talking to you. Take
Bye-bye.
care. Bye.